Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. We have been trying to iron out a couple of little mini technical difficulties, so we appreciate you hanging in there, waiting for the show to get started. It happens sometimes. We're literally broadcasting this show across the United States and then back out around the world. We run into a few little snafus, but we always seem to get them resolved in time to bring them another message out. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. And before we bring on our guest, I would also like to let everyone know that tomorrow evening I'm bringing a new guest on. He's actually becoming a very good friend of mine. He's also a close friend of Rick Adams, who has his own show on RBN. And my faithful listening audience already knows who Rick is. Rick is one of the foremost radio hosts in the Patriot movement. He is also a Christian and can certainly bring a biblical perspective into what's going on in the world. And Rick has been recommending that I get Joe on the show. Joe's actually called in one night, was surprised I knew who he was. Of course, I've heard him several times on Rick's show and I recognize that voice. This man is a musician as well as a biblical scholar. And he's going to bring a very interesting perspective to what's going on in terms of the false prophets that seem to be running rampant all over the earth. We're going to get into a discussion about this prophet being promoted by Benjamin Cream in London, the individual known as Maitreya. Maitreya is certainly a different name than Jesus, and I'm not going to presume what name that our Lord is going to return to the earth and employ. I don't think that's the importance of his return at all, what name he would call himself, but I'm fairly convinced it's not Maitreya, and we're going to be discussing that. It's an eye opener of a show, and if you want to hear some clarity in terms of traditional Christianity and what has been published in various religious books, Joe Church is a man you're going to want to hear. And I also have Mr. Carl Pearson coming on Thursday. Carl is an attorney out of New York, who is doing some fantastic things. Actually, with Carl, I've been able to get the first U.S., first attorney general on a local level in an American city. And we're not talking about on the federal level or the state level, but on a local level, someone that's going to be working for the benefit of the people in a particular community. And this is something sorely needed, perfectly legal, and really going to be appreciated by people all over the country once this spreads around and you see that you have an advocate working on your behalf in your own town. So those are a couple of the guests coming up. Of course, Friday night will be Jim Murray, and Jim and I have been doing a show on consciousness. We're going to continue that. Even tonight we'll be touching upon that topic because I've heard your call. I'm answering your emails and your pleas for some solutions. What can we do? What can I do is the the resounding question, and so I've taken it upon myself to bring that message out in the context of what's going on, and we're talking about discernment and differentiating between the heart that the Creator gave us versus this mind heart that the media and the cabal that runs the planet would prefer that we use. And it's the one that constantly draws your attention to your ego or your false self. And I guess the ego serves anyone as long as they want it to serve them. There comes a point where the ego is nothing more than a pawn or a puppet. You might as well take your ego and run for the presidency. Because we're no less or no more a pawn than that person when they're doing the bidding of others that don't even live in this country. That said, I'd like to invite back a good friend. She is the co-host of the Inside Hour, former host of the Mission Possible show here on BBS Radio, and she's a good friend of Dr. Len Horowitz. If you were listening to the Insight Hour right before this show on every Tuesday night, then you are familiar with Reverend Roxy Hampton. Reverend, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. I'm so happy to be here
on your show today. I'm happy to have you. And I can tell that the tree frogs are happy to be on the show, too, as usual.
Yes, they're still alive and well.
Oh, they couldn't
haven't
make
gone
it.
Anywhere.
They couldn't make it in the Midwest. We've got snow, so they
you
would
got
be.
Snow, you got cold there. They don't like cold. That's for sure.
No, they would be going down the rabbit hole right about now.
And you wouldn't hear them.
Yeah. Well, how have things been with you?
Oh, things have been just absolutely peachy keen. I mean, as far as me, it's the state of the world that I'm concerned about, and state of affairs and the government and what's going on. I mean, the appointments are coming fast and furious, and the names are so familiar to me that all I do is go back in my notes, and I go, what the heck are you doing there? And then I go, oh, you're part of the machine. You're part of the machine. You're necessary. I am reeling over the possibility that the Secretary of State might be Hillary Clinton. I'm reeling over the fact that Eric Holder may be the Attorney General. So, I mean, anywhere you want to start, here's the stooge, and he's done gone to Washington, and we need to be aware of who these people are and the kind of evidence that they are going to remove from our public records. I know why they're there. They're there to fix history.
Yeah, actually, you know, this is kind of interesting. You know, if you remember some weeks ago, I told my listening audience, and I think you were even on the show, and I mentioned there was a reason why I named that article, The Three Stooges Go to Washington. And although the timing, just because of all the innumerable events that have transpired after the publication of the first few parts in that series, there was so much new news coming out that it became a humongous piece. I mean, it's turned into a book, really, taking up four or five pages of the Idaho Observer each part. And we had to pare down the information, and then we ended up putting information back in, and things that I had, conclusions that I had drawn are now coming to light as fact. And the aspects about the certificate of live birth, and now we have, in addition to that, a what appears to be a totally bogus selective service registration card. Dates are all screwed up on it, definitely manipulated, and it's just more of the same fraud being perpetrated on the public. You've got at least 12, I've heard as many as 17 lawsuits nationwide about exposing Obama's citizenship, demanding that that he determine that. And, you know, it's if we get a man from Mars comes down here and gets elected president and he can't prove he's an American, he doesn't qualify for the job. So I don't care where Obama is from. He's not been able to prove so far that he's an American, and his actions are definitely betraying all of his campaign promises. And he hasn't even been sworn in yet. So, I mean, the writing's on the wall. If people can't see what's happening, we are in trouble, but we're prepared to deal with it anyway.
Well, you know, I've been desperately looking for some report on the court case that was taken in Honolulu today at 10:30, November 18th at 10:30 a.m. on access to Barack Obama's birth certificate. This is a man named Andy Martin who has gone to Honolulu and is in the process of ascertaining the pertinent information that is needed. His argument is that right to privacy is not really pertinent here, since Obama willingly published his certificate of live birth. His certificate of live birth from Honolulu on a website, which then, after two forgery experts looked at it, had enough points to say that there was something wrong with this record. So I've been desperately looking and have not found anything today, it being November 18th, as to how that all has turned out. The media hasn't even mentioned it today, and I think it's big news. I think it's the biggest news one way or the other. You'd think that he would take advantage of it and come forward with his original birth certificate, but unfortunately, it's all been sealed. I, too, have been finding out some mind-blowing stuff about him over here in Honolulu that just supports everything that you've been saying for the past, I guess, how long has it been, Don?
Four and a half, almost five months.
And some of these people have been saying this very same thing since 2007. And none of these people have been charged with libel. And the fact that he is answering it with this particular document that was up on Fight the Smear and also one of his other websites, it is very interesting. So I'm just telling everybody to remain open on this one. This one is it's not over, folks, and so therefore we should prepare ourselves for change. It's exactly what they have touted. So we have to begin to learn how to accept change, and that change may be large, and it may be change that no one is prepared to accept. And so therefore, this question of his birth and this question of his mother's locality when she gave birth and her mentality in terms of passing citizenship on to her son is in big question here. And it's a very important question, for if we ignore it, then other things can be put upon us, and it truly means that we have no constitution, which a lot of people today are already surmising is very true, that we no longer have a constitution. Back to you, Don.
Well, the question is, are we going to accept that? And most people that are aware are going to say, absolutely not. We're not going to accept that. Now, I think you had called in to the show last week, in fact, and I had mentioned to you that I had made some discoveries about the true origin of Stanley Armour Dunham and Madeline Dunham, and I got some interesting information. You see, when you publish a story like I published, and it was a genealogical piece for those in the listening audience, including the NSA that were wondering, I went down the rabbit hole, and and examined just the statements that Obama made in his autobiography and then the statements that others had made. And we have all these developing stories now that the autobiography has been determined by four different computer software software manufacturing companies that produce analyzing software, where they can take like a book and they can enter all the text of the book in there, and then they can compare it to other books. They can compare the styles, and they can determine who wrote the book based on grammar and punctuation and the use of words in certain places, and or just the repeated use of a particular word that maybe is characteristic of that individual and not of most other authors. And it was determined by four of these companies, four out of five that were had done the work already, that there were numerous examples that show that William Ayers wrote Dreams for My Father. Now, this is what they say. I don't make that charge, but I can tell you from what I have read of Dreams for My Father, I have been able to just about debunk everything that Obama has said. I can find conflicting evidence or very substantial evidence showing that what claims he made were not true. On the basis of there's no way to prove these things, that there is no information in the places where one would find that information. What I did find, Reverend, was that an informant came forth who went to school with Stanley Ann Dunham in Oklahoma City. Now, I may have mentioned that to you, but it bears repeating again. So it sinks into the listening audience's consciousness that this story about Kansas mirrors The Wizard of Oz. And as I said, Dorothy Gale in her grave can rest assured that Kansas is hers. Oklahoma City now belongs to Stanley Ann, Stanley Armour, and Madeline Lee Payne Dunham. They were working for the CIA. The CIA has a file on Stanley Armour having stolen blueprints of planes being manufactured at Boeing, Wichita, and that he also was involved in sabotaging some planes that were being built there. That we have the Rosie the Riveter story, that Madeline was working there on planes, and I seriously doubt that she was doing that at all. She was probably working somewhere where she had access to documents, and so she facilitated the theft of those documents. I would stake my reputation on that at this point on the basis of some of the information that I came up with. Tell me what a family reared and raised and married and living in Kansas and with this big story that we've been told would be doing sending their daughter to kindergarten class at age 7 in War Acres, Oklahoma at the Estes run school. And Estes is a family that founded Estes Park, Colorado, and they have these schools in various parts of the country which are similar to the concept of a Montessori school, except they're more about mind control of children than they are about higher education or a sophisticated education. Mrs. Estes ran Kindernook, which was the kindergarten school that Stanley Ann went to at age 7. And I have a picture of her in her first grade class at Putnam Elementary School Putnam City, which is another suburb in the same general area of War Acres, which is a suburb of Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City became the hotbed and the landing point for all of the Operation Paperclip Nazis at the conclusion of World War II. In fact, there's a company tied in with the companies that Obama is involved in under the aliases I discovered, that is managing the Popeye's chicken and biscuits. I say managing, they're handling the development, the building of these restaurants, and they do this all over the world internationally. Used to be called War Industries. It's now called Praxis Development. And the grandson who is now running the country, the grandson of C.B. War, W-A-R-R, went to school at Oklahoma Baptist University, which happens to be where Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, under the alias Samuel Randall Pittman, was teaching law. He lived at 426 Middle Avenue in Shawnee, Oklahoma. This is where the Praxis president, the current Praxis president, went to school. Very interesting that this connection is there. Now, can I blame this totally on the university? They had to have known Samuel Randall Pittman was Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, and that the school was just a cover for the Nazis that came over under Operation Paperclip. Canaris being the head of the Dachau DVD, or the Abwehr, which George Bush took over in 1978 after Canaris became ill in 76 and was substituted with Henry Kissinger for 2 years. Bush took over that organization. So the SS, the underground Abwehr, has been run by George H.W. Bush since 1978, even while he became illegally president of the United States, because he himself, as I have proven in my research, was an illegal immigrant, forged all his papers. I mean, it's just never ending, the amount of corruption that's in there. So we know that these people were working for the Rockefellers, and I'm talking about the Dunhams. So I know from 1949 through 1951, they were in Oklahoma City, and they were known to be working with the CIA because my informant. I'm sorry, you were breaking up there. Are you with us, Rep?
Oh, yeah, I just got cut off again. There's something going on the line.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
But you know, Don, you mentioned 1978.
Yes.
And it's interesting that you bring up George Bush in 1978, because for those of us who don't remember that when I called in, I promised that we would get to this fateful year and the day. And today is November 18th, and if we could, in a minute, go to November 18th, 1978, I'd like to bring up some footprints that lead up to this moment that we are experiencing right now. I find it very interesting that Andy Martin bought a case in Hawaii about this man's birth certificate, because it seems that our Hawaii officials are covering up something. I don't know how long it will take them to do whatever they have to do to get their butt out of a crack, but there is a lawsuit, and it's going on. When I hear 1978, November 18th, I think back to Jonestown, to the tragedy that was down in Guyana, and I thought that tonight we might revisit that. And with the help of when Dr. Len comes in, kind of connect all the dots. And before there was Jonestown, it's kind of interesting because, you know, in that same time, August, we lost the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And then 33 days later, we lost another Pope.
Yeah.
So to John Paul's, and then we gained the Pope. Cardinal Montini, also known as Pius VI, passed on, and they elected a very pastoral pope. His name was John Paul I, and he was considered to be, all people were very happy with this selection. He was a very simple man. He was an activist. He wanted to talk to people. He wanted to speak directly to the cardinals himself. And what people don't understand about the Vatican is that it is a nation unto itself, and it has, like we have, a security council, which they call the Curia, C-U-R-I-A, I guess is the way you spell it. And this is a very powerful group of people. And when this pastoral pope was elected, there was a protest vote where 20 of the cardinals refused to vote. And so this was the cardinals who represent the extreme right of politics, and which would hook them up with the extreme right of our country. Mm-hmm. When you look at that summer of August and all the way through to October, you see a situation where two popes die. One pope dies, and the one that was the pastoral pope, he's in good health. He's fine. He goes to bed, and they find him dead. Two people, one cardinal and another just a woman, a nun, who usually checks in on him. They both had conflicting reports on how this pope looked at death. One said he was smiling and he looked very natural. Now, that's really hard to do when you've died reportedly of a heart attack or a stroke. You just don't look like you're smiling. So
they had a scene like that in The Godfather, too. They had that very same scenario take place.
Well, what do they say? Movies are imitating life or life is imitating the movies? I'm not sure which way it goes, but certainly light bulbs went off in everybody's heads, and the possibility that a pope had been murdered spread through the newspapers. I mean, everybody was calling for autopsy. The Vatican was saying, no autopsy, he's out of here, we're buried, he's gone, don't even think about it. And so as far as November 17th, newspapers in the L.A. Times, New York Times, all of the papers were calling for an investigation into this pope. The replacement pope, which is interesting for people to remember, in 1978, was John Paul II. This was the Polish pope. Now, what's interesting about this particular man is that he lived between Auschwitz and Krakow. Both of these are death camps. Mm-hmm. This individual worked for a chemical company. This individual worked in the quarries. It was very difficult for people to find out exactly what he did. This man had a mystery and a cover over him, but he was the Polish pope. What happened
he worked for IG Farben and sold Klystron B gas.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
So the Polish Pope John Paul comes in. The politics of the Vatican, the death of Pope John Paul, no autopsies ordered, talk of Vatican officials signing off on Nazi passports and going and sending them off to Brazil and to Argentina, the relationships to IG Farben, to the Ford Motor Company, to the Rockefellers, to DuPont, on and on and on. Even down to, and bringing it down to a name we all know, Brzezinski, who we believe is the one who actually selected John Paul II.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what America and the world was facing on November 17th, 1978. All this, what I call skullduggery. And then, on November 18th, which is today, 30 years ago today, there was an incident in South America, right next to Venezuela, in a place called Jonestown. 913 people died in the jungle. What I am trying to see here, and what I'm going to be tying in tonight, is trying to explain to your listeners that what has happened down in Jonestown could possibly happen here in the United States. We are talking about a collusion of military, of scientists, of mind control, of universities, and intelligence organizations doing government experiments on 1,200 Americans.
Mm-hmm. Reverend, before we go any further, if I can surprise you, we have a surprise caller on the line. Dr. Len is with us. Dr. Len, thanks for waiting so patiently.
Oh, I'm fascinated by both your discussions. I think it's a great history and a history lesson I appreciate.
And welcome to Evidence Footprints. It's been a while.
Thank you.
What's your take on Jonestown, Dr. Len?
It was a CIA operation. There's no question in my mind that, you know, I haven't read significantly on it other than to conclude that it was a CIA operation. Like you say, it was a mind control, and I think at the time the primary experiment was to see how much could be accomplished in terms of the cover-up, you know, manipulation of a large population with a pseudo-religious band or a theological community that was under influence of mind control as well as drugs, and that, you know, the operation, I understand, was a CIA operation.
Very true. It was CIA. And that's why, Don, you're telling me about what George Bush was doing at that very time seems to connect some of the dots really carefully.
Yeah. One point I wanted to add in talking about the Dunhams, and this is critical because of all of this flack about this birth certificate. Stanley Armour was known as Mr. Al and visited Oklahoma City quite often. And I have been able recently, I was also given a photo of three couples. And every time I see a picture of the Dunhams, they look different. And I can't tell you if they were undergoing plastic surgery or maybe some sort of a genetic therapy, if you want to use that term, or experimentation. But they resemble their earlier selves of a few years, but there are already differences appearing in their general appearance, which raises a question, are these the same people? When you see Stanley Ann as a 7-year-old kindergarten student an 8-year-old first grader at Putnam Elementary School, she has blonde hair. Now, her hair looks blonde in her baby picture. In my part 3 of the Three Stooges article, I published a trio photo of the Dunhams with Stanley Ann in a dress wearing a little bow. And her face does not match her face later on. She has a rather long chin. And for this chin to suddenly develop when she goes to Beirut, Lebanon, to Notre Dame de Jamour, to get her special education there, it rings a very sinister tone, because Mr. Al, Stanley Armour Dunham, was described as being from Chicago and Lebanon. This story of Kansas City is nothing but a new version of The Wizard of Oz. And so keep in mind that the four addresses that I found registered to Madeline Dunham all of a sudden make all the sense in the world. Actually, I found out within the past week that Madeline Dunham was the escrow agent at the Bank of Hawaii, and she also sold real estate mortgages. So it mirrors the money laundering that I had uncovered with the aliases of Barack Obama. Pretty damning evidence.
Well, you know, I was questioning the what you were talking about. You were mentioning the fact that people described her as a very charming woman, mild-mannered, and wouldn't call anybody outside their name. And I was wondering if that was true, because, you know, there are other sides that say that she was a pretty foul mouth and could be quite hostile, specifically to Obama when he was growing up.
Well, the bank employee that roasted her at her retirement party in 1986 spoke very highly of her and made those statements. So I'm just taking, you know, his published statements for what they're worth. I guess it really doesn't matter one way or the other. This is the type of spin that they have everybody focusing their attention on to keep from focusing on the type of information I'm alluding to right now.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off, but the reason I was saying that is because there are people over here in Hawaii who tell a different story of her.
It's very likely based on what came out with Frank Marshall Davis. Now, there is something in one of Davis's books, by the way, and then I'm going to open the mic to both of you guests here, and that is the fact that in his book, Sex Rebel, Davis describes meeting a couple from Seattle by the name of Dot and Lloyd and having a three-day sexual tryst with them. And in the book, I understand he's very graphic about what they did for 3 days. And I found out that the other female bank vice president, the only other female bank vice president at the Bank of Hawaii, was a woman by the name of Dorothy Yamamoto. Now, Dot is the nickname for Dorothy. And so I began looking to see if there wasn't a Dorothy and Lloyd Yamamoto. Found one, Lloyd Yamamoto, born in Michigan, grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, went to South High School, became a chemist. Interestingly, the person who is in the photo with the Dunhams and another previously unidentified individual was a chemist. And his father, Yamamoto's father, was the geneticist. And the unidentified person all of a sudden appeared on a link that one of my listeners sent me to go listen to some audio archives of some very outrageous spiritual teaching of a Dr. George King. Dr. King is the man unidentified in the photo. I've been able to make a connection. Dr. King claims he's getting, or claimed he was getting messages from Mars and Venus, and started a cult called the Aetherius Organization, which was in San Francisco. He was living and died in Santa Barbara, and now the organization operates out of Los Angeles and London and various other countries around the world. So now we have a cult situation in there, which again is like CIA. Any comments from either one of you?
Oh, that's Dr. Lin?
Yeah, you know, it's like I have not studied this field, and it's I'm just fascinated by it. The depths of the investigation that you've done, Don, are just awesome, just absolutely, superlative. It's award-winning journalism, and I think that you have got to do a book on this with all the photographs and everything. I appreciate our good friend Don Harkins at the Idaho Observer publishing your fine articles, but I really believe that you have a book here.
Yes, everyone, even Don has said, I've got to put all this in a book.
Yeah.
It is, and this is, you know, this is the Lord opening my spiritual eyes to see all this, to discern this, you see. I see it, and then I go out and I find the facts.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I can relate to that, and I know what Creator puts on your heart as an investigative journalist, and then opens all those doors for all these little bits and pieces of information to come together. As I listen to you, it has all the earmarks of that. And it's reminiscent of what I went through with the emerging viruses investigation. The challenge is that, you know, on a radio show that's maybe an hour long or even a couple hours long, where you go into these characters and the names and the relationships and the financial administrative connections, it really doesn't give the whole story. A book or a documentary is what I think would best serve to bring your truth out.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And that's,
you know,
go ahead, Rev.
Well, I wanted to kind of cement this. I have Dr. Lennon and you here, and you know, we talk about research, and I just wanted to kind of show people just how easy it is to find truth in books that are written that people maybe don't read anymore, but it gives us insight, excuse the expression, to what we're dealing with here in terms of the kind of people that we're dealing with. Especially when you say that that George Bush may not be who he says he is. I mean, senior, that he may be a German plant, so to supplanter, I guess is what you would call him, and that his mentality would reflect that of the Nazis that were doing the medical experiments and the intelligence work with his SS and the medical experiments. And for people that may not understand that, they can get the book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and they could turn to the chapter on the New Order, and they can read for themselves the types of medical experiments that were done on people in the 30s and the 40s while the war was going on. And that, to me, what we cannot even begin to consider has been done to people, and it gets right back to Jonestown, because I believe that these very same doctors who were given life imprisonment were let go by John J. McCloy by 1960. All the Nazis that we had in prison were let go, given money, and allowed to continue their work so that the Third Reich would continue on to the Fourth Reich.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how close we are to halftime, but I definitely wanted to. It's painful sometimes to read these things, but I thought I'd share with your listeners some of the different experiments that were used against people to give them an idea of what we're facing and what happened perhaps down in Jonestown to those people.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah,
okay.
we have about let's say 10, 12 minutes.
Okay. I'm reading on page 979 of the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. The Nazi medical experiments are an example of the sadism in the use of concentration camp inmates and prisoners of war as human guinea pigs. Very little, if any, benefit to science was achieved. It is a tale of horror of which German medical profession cannot be proud. Although the experiments were conducted by fewer than 200 murderous quacks, some of them held eminent posts in the medical world. Their criminal work was known to thousands of leading physicians of the Reich. Not a single one of them, so far as the record shows, ever uttered the slightest public protest. In the murders in the fields of Jews, they were not the only victims. The Nazi doctors also used Russian prisoners of war, Polish concentration camp inmates, women as well as men, and even Germans. The experiments were quite varied. Prisoners were placed in pressure chambers and subjected to high-altitude tests until they ceased breathing. They were injected with lethal doses of typhus and jaundice. They were subjected to freezing experiments in icy water or exposed naked in the snow outdoors until they froze to death. Poison bullets were tried out on them, as well as mustard gas. At Ravensbrück concentration camp for women, hundreds of Polish inmates, the rabbit girls they were called, were given gas, gangrene wounds, while others were subjected to experiments in bone grafting. At Dachau and Buchenwald, gypsies were selected to see how long and in what manner they could live on salt water. Sterilization experiments were carried out on a large scale at several camps by a variety of means on both men and women. As for the SS physicians, Himmler wrote on one occasion, "The enemy must be not only conquered, but exterminated," unquote. I don't want to go any further, but that gives you an idea. And then to think that the Pope lived between two of these camps just blows my mind.
Well, you know, it came out in some of my research, and some of this was related to the deathbed confessions of Otto Skorzeny, that Mengele was here. In fact, Mengele is still alive. And these accounts come out in the stories of Kathy O'Brien, Arizona Wilder, Cisco Wheeler, and Susan Ford, who wrote under the pen name of Bryce Taylor in the book Thanks for the Memories. She talks about Kissinger, Bush, and Mengele working together, even with Adolf Hitler, in places like California and Oregon. And, of course, we know he was up at Lake McDonald Lodge in Glacier National Park for 30 years. And he died in Clinton, in the Clinton Nursing Home in Seat Pleasant, Maryland. In 2004. This is a stretch for people, but this is where my research and the research of others is leading. So this Nazi plan is very much alive.
Dr. Lynn, one of the reasons I'm so happy that you joined us tonight is because I truly believe that you eventually will be vindicated in your in the way people responded to your research about how we come up with the AIDS virus. And I thought this evening it would, with what we're talking about here, experimentation, that you might give us a short kind of like overview of how the very same things that these doctors were doing is how we established the AIDS virus and then put it into the population. Could you just kind of, for the archives, say a few words about that, because it's all part and parcel of what we're talking about tonight.
Certainly, Reverend Roxy. You know, the sadness in my heart that comes up when I'm listening to both of you share the truth is reflecting on my mother, who scrubbed the streets at Nazi gunpoint at age 16, a beautiful blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jewish woman, daughter of a family-run business clothing store that on Kristallnacht was taken over by the Nazis. And I just share that for the fact that she was always telling me that this neo-Nazi threat existed. I protested. I was very, very foolish, to say the least, and I basically said to her that she really needed therapy because of the trauma that she sustained. And, you know, I was so stupid to realize, to say to her that we couldn't happen again because we have the mainstream media. And that this is what, you know, and you know, I was so educated, you know, I have a Harvard degree, I have after my doctorate, and then I have another master's degree, and I was so knowledgeable about human behavior, but yet so stupid about the obvious politics that were unfolding at the time that you're now relaying. So it grieves me personally, you know, as beyond my feeling for humanity, and that with regard to everything that you're talking about, it's consistent with my investigation of the origins of HIV/AIDS, in that the IG Farben cartel, which has evolved into the military, medical, petrochemical, pharmaceutical cartel, whereby all of that money was invested at the end of World War II. Martin Bormann was the money handler for the Third Reich, and there's a lot of reputable researchers. I speak of, for example, Ahrens and Loftus in the secret war against the Jews, where they found that the Bush family, Prescott Bush, was heavily involved in the banking families and the Harriman, Brown, and Union banks in laundering the money that was coming out of Nazi Germany, and that Martin Bormann was never found. The money all got out. The rat lines pulled the Nazis as well as the much of the money out. The church was involved. Bishop Udall was heavily involved as a bag man, a money launderer. And that's a lot of the Bush fortunes came from that incredible cover-up. And so when I heard, you know, Bush, George H.W. Bush, the old man, give his State of the Union address and basically say that the New World Order is going to be such a fine thing for the 1,000 points of light and for humanity. And I realized that this was really the new Ordnung, the new order, that the Fourth Reich, the rise of the Fourth Reich, was what was intended, that the flight capital, it was called, that Martin Bormann working the Nazi war chest, working the banks, the banking investments in the United States through the Bush family, had invested this for specifically the rise of the Fourth Reich, for specifically the new Ordnung, the new order. And, you know, when I began to investigate that background, insofar as the Merck Pharmaceutical Company, which received the lion's share of the Nazi war chest at the during World War II, they were the president of the company, George W. Merck, was made by President Roosevelt America's biological weapons industry director. And then subsequently their vaccine, hepatitis B vaccine, was what injected into the gay men in New York City, in the village of New York, as well as the blacks in Central Africa. This was what the scientific evidence proved, and that ultimately you have to raise the specter of hideous genocidal suspicion. And the greatest obvious evidence is that allegedly we live in a free society with investigative journalists supposedly doing their jobs, and yet this evidence we've been putting out, and nobody's talking about it. Not one mainstream media source, not one investigative journalist, not even William Broad of the New York Times, who I used to respect until he's now covered up this anthrax crap. You know, the anthrax mailing business, that's a complete, another hideous contemporary scam. So you begin to realize, holy smoke, they're self-incriminated. You know, if it was not true, if it was obviously false, it would be a simple matter of discrediting the evidence and those who claim it. But, you know, you've seen, in my particular case, you know, the mainstream media completely neglect me. You've seen the political public health officials completely run away from opportunities to debate me. And you realize that, holy smoke, gee whiz, that in and of itself is an absolutely condemning fact in allegedly a free society that prides itself for its open media.
On that note, I think, Don, it's at 9 o'clock, the top of the hour here.
Well, we have a moment, but I'd like to comment on what Dr. Horowitz said. Eric Berman, who wrote The Bush Connection, and it's based primarily on the photos and the accounts of the photos given to him by Otto Skorzeny before Skorzeny's death in Boynton Beach, Florida, on December 31st, 1999. His alias... and Eric didn't publish his alias, but I'm going to disclose this to the listening audience. Anyone can Google or do a search on this name in the Social Security Death Index. Edward Frank Pyzina, spelled P-Y-Z-Y-N-A. Edward Frank Pyzina was the alias of Otto Skorzeny. Look it up, and you'll find that that's the same individual. Now, Mengele's alias is Stephen Rabel, R-A-B-E-L, and he works for R.W. Grace Chemical Company. That's a very hideous company. They made their fortune in Lima, Peru. When Grace founded the company, they were selling bat guano. If you want to get into deadly diseases, they know that Ebola has a direct link to bat guano in Africa. In the research that was done a number of years ago, I had read about it in a book which was describing four strains of Ebola, that a simian variety known as Restin Ebola. And they ended up having to just completely dismantle the lab because the disease became rampant, and and the scientists working were inadvertently exposed to it. But nevertheless, when you're dealing with such dangerous toxins or neurotoxins or viruses of such a hideous nature, someone eventually is going to succumb to it. They had to bring in cleaning teams and do the whole building from top to bottom, shut the whole thing down, kill all the monkeys, and they probably had 30 or more monkeys that were being tested with this disease. So this and this is something that was going on as late as the 1990s. I think I read the book somewhere around 1991. This is not something that just happened in 1972 via the World Health Organization. It's been a program carried on. Berman thinks very strongly, he goes by Eric O'Ryan. Eric feels very strongly that Mengele was behind the anthrax mailings on the basis of a lot of the information that Skorzeny had given him. Now, Skorzeny died before that occurred. However, you mentioned Martin Bormann. I've got pictures of Bormann and Reinhard Galen and Skorzeny and their families and a meeting for weddings and annual get-togethers. We even have Hitler in one picture at the Lake McDonald Lodge taken August 18th, 1997. At that time, Skorzeny was standing up, and in later photos, he was sitting in a wheelchair. But he did not die in Madrid, Spain in 1975. Bormann did not die of a bullet wound trying to escape from the British. Those are all fabrications. Hitler himself lived several years with Eva Braun in a ski resort in Argentina, and then they moved him up to Lake McDonald Lodge, but he traveled around the United States in these mind control, in these sadistic experiments that Dr. Horowitz and Reverend Roxy have alluded to. We're going to take a short break. This is a lot to think about. And we'll be right back with Evident Footprints and our special guest, Reverend Roxy Hampton, and my good friend, Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Don't go away. More to come.
Food. HempUSA.org has an inexpensive, nutritionally dense, high-frequency food. Hemp, known around the world, will boost from you and increase energy levels, detoxifies the body, and reduces junk food cravings, burns fat and builds muscle, and is easy to digest, non-allergenic, and gluten-free. Can be made into smoothies, breads, muffins, pancakes, cookies, you name it. The entire planet should make this a staple food in their diet. The seeds will scrape the colon wall, the powder will feed the body vital minerals, and the oil will clean the arterial walls and feed the brain. Try our powder, seeds, and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org. That's 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. Remember, vacuum packaging this food will have at least a 5-year shelf life stored in a cool, dark, dry place. Holidays are coming, and this would make a perfect gift for friends and family. Call today, 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. The Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Welcome back to our second hour of Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this November the 18th, 2008. And our special guests, Reverend Roxy Hampton and Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Welcome back, folks. Anybody want to take the mic?
I've got a delay in my ears, so but I wanted Dr. Len, I wanted him to explain. He mentioned anthrax, and the reason why is I really, Dr. Len, will you please explain to everybody what we're talking about here in terms of the anthrax and the markers and where this specific anthrax comes from? Because a lot of times we talk about things, but we're really not getting down to the specific aha. This is where we've got you. This particular strain is this way, blah, 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 blah. And how important that is to this case that the Attorney General seems to be dragging his feet on and trying to blame this poor dead doctor and where it all came from. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those, gee whiz, you know, it's a really great example of how the emperor's got no clothes. Everybody sees it. That's paying attention to the parade, but the parade just keeps marching along, and like, you know, the emperor has no desire whatsoever to even feel embarrassed. And that's what they're talking about with terms of the Attorney General and the FBI that have been engaged with the anthrax mailings investigation. And actually, it was even this afternoon, it came through my email, the latest reports and articles that are coming out that Barry Kissin, who is an attorney who has been advancing the litigation to attempt to put pressure on the FBI to come clean, and basically shares that this demonization of a dead man named Ivins for allegedly being the mailer and the creator of this strain of anthrax is so absurd. It is so ludicrous. It violates all of the science. And what passed my desk this afternoon was this statement in a recently published article in even a mainstream periodical of Popoff, who is the, I think his first name is Andrei Popoff, who is Russia's top biological weapons expert, who's now in the United States. I think he's in Virginia teaching and having a university position, coming out and actually saying that there's no possible way that Ivins could have done it by himself, that it was the fact that this was a hyper-weaponized, silica-cut, electromagnetized, hyper-concentrated Ames strain of anthrax that was, it was 1 billion spores per gram, which was twice as concentrated as anything the Soviets were ever capable of creating in their heyday, and that it was somehow mailed to, interestingly enough, you mentioned the Boca Raton area, to, I understand, the source of the tabloid down there, American Media is the name of the company, but the National Enquirer, I believe, sources from this facility, along with some of the other tabloids, that I understand that facility was owned or co-owned by Mayor Giuliani, and that the editor of this newspaper that was killed in the mailings had some extreme hypersensitive documentation on the scams about which you're speaking. This whole evolution of Nazism in the United States, this neo-fascism, the rise of the Fourth Reich in America, this was the collaboration of 9/11 that basically pulled down the buildings that didn't even get hit, and covered up in the process a lot of CIA and intelligence documentation, a lot of financial documentation. And interestingly enough, that this whole anthrax mailing was centered on this building as a tabloid, and then, of course, the spin on it was that they're attacking the mainstream media, and, of course, the whole mainstream media needs to, you know, basically get freaked out about this mailing so that the principal beneficiary would be the Bayer Corporation, which, of course, linked intimately to IG Farben. The Bayer Corporation was the premier founding corporation for the IG Farben, the petrochemical cartel. The president of Bayer Corporation, which sold Cipro, that profiteered off of the anthrax mailings fright, had the favor of the United States federal government's Food and Drug Administration of having this ridiculous, nonsensical, virtually genocidal selection of the Cipro as the sole, only, exclusive antibiotic chosen by the federal governors to protect America against the anthrax. And even though a good Italian dinner would probably do the same high in garlic, you know, and penicillin could treat it for pennies, and the other antibiotics such as doxycycline and tetracycline could easily blow out at far less a cost the anthrax versus Cipro, which clearly was untested in a major way. No one under 18 years of age had ever been experimentally given this particular drug. The side effects were hideous. The physician's desk reference and package inserts told about a lot of brain damage, neurological impairments, which we saw after 30,000 people in the Washington, D.C. area alone between September, 28th, 29th, when the evening news with Tom Brokaw, where he showed a bottle of Cipro and said, quote, now, you have to be I'm sure, appreciative of this, Don, particularly you who is given, you know, the Creator tells you to turn on your television or a radio or open a certain mail at a certain time and you get this information. I just happened to watch the news with Tom Brokaw. I never watch the news with Tom Brokaw. This night, he holds up a bottle of Cipro, and in his backdrop, the whole background is, quote, New World Order. Had nothing to do with the segment. Had nothing to do with the anthrax fright. Had nothing to do, apparently, on the surface, with the Cipro, but everything to do with it.
It's ironic that you mention that. If you pardon me for a moment, I want to comment on Brokaw, because if you remember, and this is for the listening audience, Tom Brokaw's secretary supposedly was exposed to anthrax because a letter had been mailed to Brokaw. Brokaw was one of the stockholders involved in this.
Oh, well, see, that makes sense now. That's a piece of the puzzle that I didn't have, but that makes complete sense. You know, for him to, the audacity to come out in on the mainstream news and say, in Cipro we trust, instead of God we trust, against a backdrop that said, New World Order as a heralding of a great thing. It was unbelievable. I mean, this was completely surreal. And so, you know, getting back to the Bayer Corporation, you look at the president was Herman Schmitz, who owned more shares of stock in Rockefeller Standard Oil than any of the individual Rockefellers. They were full-fledged married partners with IG Farben that ran the Auschwitz and labor facilities and other concentration camp facilities, wherein the deal, the free labor that they received, was specifically for creating synthetic rubber and oil to fuel the Rockefellers at the time that were actually, according to a federal court judge, the enemy's national, a traitor to the United States of America, because they were withholding supplies from our allies, such as the Brits, whereas they were supplying Hitler's war machine. So then you have to understand the evolution of John J. McCloy, who was a banker and a lawyer working for the Rockefeller cartel, is sent over to Germany right at the end of World War II, just when Henry Kissinger is sent over to Germany to look for the Nazis for Project Paperclip. John J. McCloy gets sent over there to, quote, decartelize the IG Farben establishment. So decartelization occurred, whereby the IG Farben cartel was allegedly broken up, but broken into what? Into American Home Products, into the BASF, all of the premier companies that came out of World War II came out of the Rockefeller-directed, Hermann Schmidt's Bayer Corporation-directed Nazi financial and petrochemical cartel.
Mm-hmm. So, if I can add one thing to that, and this is going to make sense in terms of what's happening today. A little-known secret amongst many Americans is how this whole thing with the Virginia Company and the New England Company got started, as our founding fathers were putting this country together. They sent George Payser here, who changed his name to George Bayshore. They located him in North Carolina, gave him 600 acres of property, and they sent Louis, who was the prince heir to the throne after George III, came here and changed his name to Daniel Payser. George Payser was the French paymaster, and so Daniel was nothing but the heir apparent to the throne. They began building the railroads, and they hired the agents to work for them, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the DuPonts, the Astors, on and on. All these Illuminati families, all these American elite families, Morgan was another one, J.P. Morgan, became famous and wealthy merely because they were agents for the Paysers, who were working for the British Crown. 50% of all the mineral rights of the United States still belong to the British Crown. 5% of retail sales belongs to the British Crown. So you wonder why we have a bailout right now. And these companies like Boeing or GM or Ford or Coca-Cola, AT&T, Pepsi-Cola, all the big corporations, including many of the drug companies, belong to the same group.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. You know,
I'd like to add another name to that whole thing that they got away with murder, and that's the Krupp organization. Baron Gustav Krupp, von
yes.
Bohlen.
Yes.
He had slave labor camps, and when you mentioned John J. McCloy, he was the high commissioner, and he was sentenced. Alfred Krupp was sentenced to just 12 years in prison. By 1950, and that was in 1948, it's the Nuremberg trials, right? United States versus Alfred Krupp. And he was released by John J. McCloy in an amnesty on February 4th, 1951. What's really interesting is not only was he given amnesty, but this man, John J. McCloy, not only gave him amnesty, but he also gave him back his confiscated property, gave him back his money, and an active management in his firm, and after he was released from prison. So we can see how these men got out. We're looking the other way. We're just trying to survive. And these men got busy doing exactly what they were doing during the war. And that I just wanted to add that to it.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting, I was watching briefly tonight CNN and the little wrap-up where you have Barney Frank, who is the bizarre legislator from Massachusetts, who is almost a senior congressman now, and he was heavily involved in advancing the health legislation that gives the authorization, I think it's called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, and advancing some of the pharmaceutical legislation that additionally gives the power to these corrupt officials and corrupt companies. And I'm just like, you know, everything that we're seeing on Capitol Hill, and I had the personal experience of what it's like. As a matter of fact, I'm just finishing up a three-hour documentary on my seminar, the Love Code Seminar. It's a three-hour film where one of the things I mentioned is when I was on Capitol Hill briefly testifying on behalf of the autistic children and their families that were suffering and was handed by a class action attorney the Vanderstelt documentation, the classified CDC commissioned report that definitively shows that the amount of mercury given in thimerosal-laced vaccines causes a far exceeding dose to be administered than the Environmental Protection Agency's toxic dose limits, and all the behavioral disorders, the suicidal tendencies, the depression, the autistic spectrum related illnesses, all has to do with the mercury. And I witnessed every single damned congressman and woman on this dais in the Dan Burton Congressional Investigating Committee that we, the people, think highly of, were covering up absolutely, disgustingly, despicably. And I'm wondering, what the hell? Am I living on this earth and not a part of it? Just like Jesus said, we're going to be living on a time when we're, you know, we're on the earth but no longer of it. This is how it is. I live, like you do, Don, and you do, sister, in a bizarre state of observing reality of this physical realm, this Babylonian hypocrisy, and say, I cannot believe that these people are human, that they have no semblance except they've got two arms, two legs, and this head, and gee whiz, they look human, but they can't possibly be human beings.
No, that takes us into the realm of the reptilians, doesn't it?
It sure does.
It does. Michael St. Cyr describes the banking system as a reptilian banking system. There's no coincidence in that statement.
And you know, you talked in the last hour briefly about having pictures of shape-shifting.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Barack Obama himself, in the Lolo Satoru family photo taken, I believe it was taken in Malaysia, not in Jakarta, Indonesia. All the evidence shows that had he worked for Standard Oil, it would have been in Malaysia, because Standard Oil did not move at all into Jakarta or anywhere in Indonesia until the year 2005. Their energy company was government-controlled from 1945 through 2001, was named Pertamina. Now, there were other companies that were involved in oil development, and it would have been Dutch Shell. Now, in this photo, they're sitting on a bench which looks like an office someplace, and they're posing for this photo. It's an intentional family photo. When I say intentional, in other words, they're trying to legitimize the family. And they're sitting on this this ornate bench that's got demons carved into the wood, wood frame, and I mean horrific gargoyles and serpents and dragons and the seat and the backing is wicker. And I'm looking at this photo, and the photo's telling me I'm a color photo. And so I put it into iPhoto and raised the color level, and the wall turned a tomato orange. Obama's t-shirt turned yellow with blue stripes. Pretty accurate representation just by changing the color drive of the photo. Forensically, I opened the photo, and there's an alien language in the text of the photo, which Al Bielek describes as a long-term project between the reptilians and American scientists to integrate their computers. And the description of the process in the language I discern is basically describing that they removed the color levels in the photo so no one could see what was occurring. And the statement that only a few can discern what's actually happening. Well, I happen to be one that discern that Barack Obama is actually shape-shifting in this picture. In fact, his mother is shape-shifting, and Lolo Satoru is shape-shifting. And when you add the color and zoom in, you can see entities all over their bodies. You can see deformed knees that Barack Obama has. I'm not making this up. This is in the photo that they published. And
Something else that I think it's wise to observe? You know, body language is so important, and the mouth, the oral cavity is so central. I speak as a dentist and a public health expert, but also somebody who's very well trained in neurology and histology, microanatomy, and the oral cavity, two-thirds of the sensory motor cortex of the brain is devoted to the mouth. And you know, words are the creative language. It's language like law. It's very, very important. And the lips, the labiaratum, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, are so important as creative instruments. When you watch the evening news and almost every single news commentator in mainstream, and you watch a lot of the politicians, not necessarily all of them, but they all do something totally bizarre. It's a flip. They don't show any upper teeth. They just show the lower teeth. It's not up, it's down. It's not heaven, it's hell. This is what literally they're projecting. And it's like unbelievable. And I say that as both a dentist, I say a retired dentist, somebody who's heavily engaged in behavioral science and observing behaviors and psycho, neuro, factors in body language and expression and creation. There is something definitively not human about many of these news commentators.
Absolutely. And if you watch, you can watch Larry King, or particularly there was an interview Mitt Romney did with them, and it was as though they were competing for fruit flies with their tongues. They had this... you know what I'm talking about, the little, you know, the
yeah.
tongue... I have to do the sound effects. This is radio, you know. you know, now some of the listening audience is probably thinking that we're on drugs by this portion of the show. I assure you that we are not. In fact, Ken Adachi and I have done extensive examinations of these photos, and we have seen the same entities in the smoke and flames and the dust clouds at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on 9/11. These same entities appear. So we're talking about something that is not just reptilian but also very demonic. You see, these people lack the spiritual component of a normal human being, and because of that, they have to somehow have some spiritual authority, or even if it's of the dark side, you see. And so there is a demonic presence, and just by what they do, by the creation of these wars where they can wantonly kill a million or more people and not think anything about it, or kill their own people, participate in these false flag events. Whether it's bioterrorism or outright destruction of 210 story skyscrapers that free fall in under 10 seconds.
And everybody, I mean, it's like unbelievable. I mean, tonight in this program, we've talked about three things that are absolutely absurd. It's right in front of your face. There's no evidence that suggests what the mainstream is telling you has any semblance of truth. It's the anthrax mailings, you've got the 9/11, and then what was the other one you were talking about?
Well, we're talking about the reptilians.
Yeah, no, but there was...
And we're talking about Jonestown.
There was the Jonestown, yeah, the Jonestown thing. Yeah, it's just like unbelievable stuff.
Well, Well, you know, it really goes back further than that. I mean, when we really think about Alan Dulles ordering all those LSD hits, when we think about the amount of bacteria that have been sprayed by planes, the way they can manipulate the weather, or the swine flu in Cuba, or the bacteria that they manipulate to give to mosquitoes and then release from planes that are carrying bacteria, these people sit back and they think about things. They use everything as a weapon, everything, our groundwater, the dirt, anything that they can. They sit back and they try to make it into a weapon. People need to understand also that they have no concern in terms of open testing and all the types of things that they're doing. This is called human experimentation. Dr. Len, what is the code for the Hague? Is it the Hague Code? What does it say about using people unwittingly for experiments? It's against the law. And
yeah, well, that's Nuremberg Code.
Thank you, Nuremberg Code.
Yeah, but, you know, I have a sad thing to report about the Nuremberg Code, that it can't be used anymore in litigations. You know, we initially brought that up as a possibility in our litigation against the state of Hawaii's tuberculosis genocide, and related as it is to the vaccination genocide. And we thought that, you know, that it's because, you see, the TB skin test has never been substantially determined to be safe. It's an experiment, and so you can't humanly experiment without informed consent according to the Nuremberg Code. But you see, the Nuremberg Code is no longer applicable based on the statutory laws and the manipulations in the statutory laws. And then you also can no longer get anybody on the Nuremberg defense. It used to be that the Nuremberg defense was outlawed. In other words, Hitler tells Bormann to take his money and run, you know, and Bormann then testifies, well, Hitler told me to do it. I was under orders. I had to do it. You know, it relates to all of these genocidal Manchurian candidates in the Department of Health all across the United States, particularly in Hawaii. You know, they're just all saying, well, we're under orders to give these inoculations and give these TB skin tests. But the reality is you can no longer, have a legal standing to bring the violation of the sanctions against the Nuremberg defense. It was outlawed at one time. They did say in the Nuremberg trials that you cannot use that as a defense. But in more recent years, I believe it's for the last two decades now, they have allowed the Nuremberg defense to be a suitable defense strategy in the American system of injustice.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, you know, in terms of some of these events that you're describing, especially you brought up, Reverend Roxy, you brought up the issue of LSD. I don't remember the name of the Swiss doctors, a doctor who actually invented LSD, but he was asked to provide several kilos of this by George Bush. Bush was trying to acquire it, and he refused. And it was at that point that he went to Eli Lilly in Indianapolis and got them to make a synthetic version of it. Isn't it interesting that George Bush ends up being on the board and a major stockholder in Eli Lilly, and when he runs for the presidency, who does he appoint as his running mate? Dan Quayle, who was the majority stockholder at Eli Lilly.
Gee whiz.
I think his name is Albert Hoffman.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah, he's a Swiss chemist.
And
yeah.
And he had a conscience, and he refused to do that. You know, he saw no reason, and he knew such a large amount would definitely be used against the populace for some reason, and didn't want to play any part in that.
Yeah. You know what, you're just also bringing up, we should probably have another caller on the line. named Edward Haslam, Ed Haslam, who wrote the book Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus and a couple others. When you talk about George Bush being involved with Eli Lilly and LSD experiments, you also have to reflect on George H.W. Bush being on the board of directors of Baylor College of Medicine, which Haslam has pegged a link to the Alton Oxner Clinic that was associated with David Ferry and the assassination of JFK and the whole cover-up and the Lee Harvey Oswald Patsy scam, and mm-hmm. that the cancer virus clinic that was being run down there in New Orleans at the Oxner Clinic that was covered up during the investigation by the Warren Commission of the Kennedy assassination, and that the attorney who was engaged in investigating this thing had discovered. And that the other issue is Baylor College of Medicine is largely associated with the experimentation in the prisoner population of Huntsville, Texas, and that the Texas prisoners there got the Gulf War syndrome long before the Gulf War, because that's where they created mycoplasma. It was currently the hideous germ that's most toxic, most destructive across the United States, if not the world, is this flu-like illness that won't quit. It's an immune-suppressive agent that won't quit. It's responsible for all of the symptoms of AIDS, with HIV being just a cofactor, a mild immune suppressor. The main whacker is this mycoplasma beast that's responsible for all sorts of illnesses, including what's called Gulf War syndrome and chronic fatigue immune dysfunction, fibromyalgia. A lot of autoimmune diseases are related to this immunological attack that was advanced by Baylor College of Medicine under at least partial direction of George H.W., and then this information comes from another class action lawsuit that I was privileged to have some of the attorneys send me the documentation that they were using. So I published some of that in some previous books. I know that that's in Healing Codes for the Biological Apocalypse. We've got some of that documentation still, too. Fascinating area. And I know, folks, it sounds like foolish conspiracy theories that we're advancing, but there's so much evidence that when, you know, one little smoke here and this little fire there, suddenly you got a whole blaze that's obviously burning everybody, and it's more than a conspiracy theory, it's a conspiracy reality.
Now, some months ago, I had Linda Emanuel as a guest on my show, and she wrote a book about her recovery from severe mycoplasma infection. In fact, there was a doctor, I believe, treated her in Huntsville, Alabama, with certain antibiotics and then modifying her diet. And she overcame this debilitating disease that she suffered for over 20 years. So there are cures for these diseases, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we have OxySilver today. I'm telling you, it's such a fabulous blessing to have this at this time in history. You know, it's like I feel so blessed that my children are safe, that our family is safe, and anybody that's listening, you know, please go to OxySilver.com and become an affiliate, help save lives, and you can prosper financially as well as saving lives. We're taking on many, many partners now. But, you know, there's many, many things that we should be doing, such as the frequency generators. Prayer, particularly, is extremely powerful. And, you know, there's a lot that people can do for protecting their health and recovering from these types of plagues.
Yeah.
I'm
glad
really
you brought that up, too, Doc, because I have finished Rosita Stone's album, by the way, and I'm just putting all the paperwork together for that, for, you know, her contract. And I'm also going to be presenting some healing music. And we have been doing a series of shows over the last 2 weeks discussing the issue of super consciousness and how we individually and collectively can shift this paradigm into a whole new reality. And of course, frequency, the frequency of the vibration has everything to do with it. And I want to do a series of shows, probably in December, if you can make yourself available, where we focus on the musical aspects of this too, because there are other modalities of healing, and well-being that we can introduce to the listening audience that people can, take charge of their own lives.
Absolutely. I'm so excited about everything that we're doing right now integrates 528 hertz frequency. You know, we're just coming out with Love H2O, live Love Water with a 528 hertz frequency in it. We've got several other products, Primo Life, Zeo Life, besides the Oxy Silver. And everyone I know is really grasping how powerful hydrosonics, this whole field that is going to take over for all of healthcare, is hydrosonics. And it's the music that makes us, and it's the water that sustains us and vibrates us. And we are the living water. And what brings that water to life is the music. So, you know, we've got music, the universal language. We've got love, the universal healer, and water, the universal solvent. Put them all together, and you have the solution to what ails humanity.
Mm-hmm. Roxy, I know you want to get a word in edgewise here.
No, I'm just loving it. But what I really wanted to respond to is what Dr. Lynn was saying about the Nuremberg Code. This is very distressing when you think about all of the captive people in prisons and in mental health, mental hospitals, and chronically ill patients in hospitals. This type of experimental testing of new drugs and other things, if these men who behaved like this in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s, and all through the 20th century, are still around and have established their course of therapy to new doctors, it seems to me that we as researchers have to really, really impress upon people that these men are capable of doing anything, and so we have to be very aware and alert and constantly monitoring the unusual as well as the obvious. And so I really just try to remind people that it looks to me like we're all CIA test population people, that this is their big test tube, and that things like Oxy Silver can protect us from the viruses and bacteria that they want to introduce to us unwittingly. So I'm just happy that we're having this show tonight, because when one thinks about all the things from the horrible medical experiments that the Nazis did, and even prior to that, up to now, you can see why a Jonestown would happen. To cover up the tracks, you're looking at 1978. Well, the whole thing started in 75. These people were inoculated. They were used as experiments. They were used to create new viruses and bacteria. So when you look at it, folks, just remember, it happened 30 years ago, and it could happen today, but we could protect ourselves if we are very aware and knowledgeable about history. I guess that's what I'm saying. Follow those evident footprints.
Dr. Horowitz, I wanted to ask you if it had ever been determined what was in the Kool-Aid, or was that just part of a ruse to get us to think that these people just committed suicide? In other words, was that just a cover story, because, you know, what they write in a movie script or put in a made-for-TV movie is so often slanted to cause us to believe, there's that word, that things transpired a certain way. I suspect that maybe someone may have, they may have given mass inoculations of some debilitating virus or bio weapon that they were going to test to see how long it took to take effect. Are you aware of any actual autopsies that were performed, or?
You know, no. I with regard to Jonestown, you're talking.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I plead ignorance in that field. I have not investigated that to answer that question.
I have an answer to that question, Don.
Okay.
And it definitely, they tested the unused portions of stuff that was given to people, and cyanide poisoning and was the culprit. What happened to these people is those that didn't drink the poison, they were injected. Those people that could not be injected were shot. What happened was that when the investigators, Mark Lane and Charles Gary, who also were present in Dallas, when he was down there hiding out in the jungle, there were a lot of people when the whole announcement of the mass suicide was going to happen, line up and get your, you know, it's time to do this, let's hurry up and do this, about 400 or 500 people, you know, just was trying to split. Also, when they originally went into Jonestown at the beginning, there was only, they counted like 400 to 500 bodies. 4 days later, they had 900 bodies. So there is a situation here where we believe that there were more people in another medical facility that were brought. When you look at the pictures in Newsweek and Time magazine, you can see that some of the people have identification bands around their wrist as if when you're in a hospital. It took 4 days before they went in. They said it was heavy rains, all of this. We suspect, as historians, that was a ruse, that they waited until the bodies were beyond recognition, bloated in the hot sun, and then shoved into body bags, peppermint-scented body bags, and airlifted out of there. And then no autopsies on Jim Jones, no autopsies on anybody. They then buried 400 of those people in one grave. So we don't even have identification. There was children that were supposed to be there that birthed that we didn't find those babies. Where did those babies go? This was I believe Jonestown was a way in which the news was taken off of the Pope killings and put into this. And imagine, we have a Polish Pope who is now presiding over and praying for 900 black Americans who were down and died in Jonestown. And at the time, nobody gave a darn. Even Congressman Leo Ryan, who died on the tarmac, was not investigated to the point where he was vindicated and we found his murderer. And in fact, another Oswald, Larry Layton, he was blamed for all of those killings. But when you look at the video that exists, he wasn't even there. He was in a plane on the other side of the tarmac. But yet he was mind controlled enough and controlled enough that he didn't say anything when they charged him with the murder. And he was like a robot. And so they got away with all of this. And this probably was the biggest, next to 9-1-1 was probably the biggest non-natural disaster ever to happen to Americans. And it happened in South America. So that's where the Nazis are. That's where they live. That's where they play. That's where they go.
Well, I found it interesting several months ago that 10% of the visitors to my website are from Paraguay. figure that out.
That's Bush's new retirement village.
Yeah, exactly. So they must find it pretty intriguing what I post on my website.
Oh, wow.
as most of my listening audience does. Anyway, I suspect, and something, even when I watched that Jonestown movie, and I'm trying to remember who played Jim Jones, Powers Booth, the hit of Congressman Ryan's party on the tarmac there was probably carried out by the CIA and just blamed on Jones's people, you know, because they couldn't have this information, and I'm not saying whether or not Ryan was a part of that in any way. You have to ask yourself why they send a congressman down there to investigate that. It doesn't make sense.
Well, he wasn't supposed to go. If you really know the story, there were a lot of the people, they said it was a unique program down there in Jonestown, but a lot of people were trying to get word to their family. There were many complaints. Debbie Layton, who was the secretary for the People's Temple, went down there, and then she escaped with the help of her CIA husband. What you then have is her going before Congress and saying, there's something really seriously wrong down there in Jonestown. You've got to go down and check it. But nobody wanted to do it. Leo Ryan wanted to go. His in California, they said, no, you can't go. And he went down there at his own money. Mark Lane, who you must be familiar with from the JFK assassinations and all of that, he followed Leo Ryan down because he wanted to stop him from even going. And Leo Ryan went down there, and they put on a great show for him. A great show. They were clapping everything. But then people started slipping him notes saying, we want to go back with you. And as a congressman, and because these were American citizens in a foreign country, he had every right to take as many people as he wanted. And that's when Jim Jones said, oh my goodness, the jig is up. Because that's when they would find all the electrodes and the implants and the different problems that these people, men and women, are having and what they've been doing to them. So then the jig is up, and so therefore he has to do the drill. Mind control? Yeah, very mind control. Are they still doing it today? Yeah. I'm almost to the point where I believe, with everything I'm seeing, that we are going to have the first intelligence officer as President of the United States that is mind-controlled and compartmentalized into two different people and lives two different lives right in front of the camera. So stay tuned, folks. It ain't over. And so we need to question everything that's going on with this administration and the one to come. I think we
and don't forget those photographs that we were talking about.
Right.
You know, it reveals quite a bit, you know. It reveals quite a bit. And it ties all this together. It's the glue to every world problem. And if you look at what's happening to the gold, and we've talked about this on other shows, and I think together we've talked about this to some extent. It's no accident that the world financial community is imploding. It's designed to do that. And while all this is going on, you notice how there's this concerted effort to get people to cash in their gold jewelry to have it melted down and this is a media campaign to get people to turn in their gold. I suspect that they're even taking the gold off planet, and I don't mean humans. We have been turned into a society on this planet of good gold miners for the past 450,000 years, and that time is about to end, and they know it. They know the gig is up. So
exciting times we live in.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Lynn, I feel you want to say something here.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating when you look at the spiritual aspects of gold and the more recent evidence in the science of monoatomic gold and how that may be the ancient manna, that people are more than bread alone. We are far more, we're spiritual beings first, and there's the whole understanding of what's opening up the hearts, what's bringing us into this more divine human communion, and that this superhuman capability that we all have, that if we are of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and we're not of alien stock, then we have the capacity to fulfill the destiny of becoming a full spirit-filled being. And that's really, I think, what this gold thing is about. I think you're trying to get it off planet, trying to get it away from the people, because ultimately we're finding the secrets of gold.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite possible that it has been used in the same way, or is intended to be used in other areas of our galaxy, and you know, this stretches the imagination. But this is the late hour, and the folks listening to this show have seen things, they've had their own experiences, and it's quite obvious that there's something going on out in space. It's quite obvious that the world leaders, as they would like us to perceive them as, are being controlled by something else. And it's got to be non-human in origin just by the basis of how these people masquerading as human beings are treating the real human beings.
Yeah.
It's quite evident.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the footprints are there.
It's very true that the astronauts' helmets are lined in gold.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's, you know, gold has become the secret medium of exchange. Secret. They've turned everything into oil, which is referred to even on the Beverly Hillbillies as black gold. Texas tea.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. We're lied to virtually at every stretch of the road. The issue of global warming, the issue of energy, and really, you know, scientist Jim Murray puts it very succinctly when he says that this is not an issue of energy, it's about power. It's all about power. Even our conception or our conceptualization of the importance of energy, it's what energy becomes when it's put into motion. It becomes power. And are these individuals not power hungry? Everything they do is based on power and control. And the money, which is we know is an illusion, we've been brainwashed into seeing it as something real. And if you, I often say, if you take it off the table, what are the differences between us and them? What power do they have over us? And they've made the money useless, and it's got no. They made it worthless as well. The writing's on the wall, folks. If we only wake up to that fact, we only have ourselves at that point to rely upon, and of course the Creator, and our connection, and everything that they've put us through over thousands and thousands of years on this planet has been an unending sequence of attempting to separate us from our Creator, and they've still somehow failed at it. They've been very successful in a general sense. They've got the majority of the population dumbed down and in a somnambulistic state, asleep, unconscious, mind-controlled, brainwashed, and yet there's some aspect of spirit that keeps awakening us, prodding us to awaken. Any comments from either one?
Dr. Lane?
No, go ahead, sis.
Well, Don, I only have this comment that I'm just happy that you do a show like this. I so love being able to transmit knowledge, information, clarify, get people to check out what we're saying. For everything that you've heard tonight, folks, is history. It is fact. It is founded on the archives that we go into, the congressional records. And so, therefore, we encourage you to do your due diligence, as Dr. Len says, and be aware and stay awake. Don't go to sleep. Keep on the watch, for you never know when it's going to hit, and you want to be ready to believe and have faith that you are a deserving human being and allowed to live on this planet, which I call heaven on earth.
Amen. Dr. Len, I got to listen to part of your show tonight, and I heard you talking about fear. And I want to address the issue of fear, because that is our biggest enemy, and it's an illusion. You know, we often refer to it as false evidence appearing real.
Right.
And this aspect of fear can make us putty in their hands if we succumb to it. And we often hear that what you put your attention on becomes your reality.
Yeah.
It works both ways. Let's not forget that the way they're acting and reacting to what's going on, and the fact that they know very well that we're waking up. I mean, if they have Project Looking Glass and they can look into the future and assess what probabilities are going to be, and they spend a lot of time doing that, as spiritual beings, as creations of God, have to remember that it works both ways, that what they put their attention on becomes their reality, and they're the creators, they're the authors of this fear. All we have to do is stop using their currency to buy into it. It's all we've got to do.
Well, that's what I think on many ways. You know, psychosocially, don't buy into it. You know, like I've been saying, can't wait till they give a war and nobody shows up to fight it. You know, can't wait till they give an election and nobody goes into the fraud, you know, the complete manipulation. But, you know, we're such a minority in the way we think compared to the rest of the brainwashed world. And that, a lot of people are waking up. But if you really look at what's causing people to wake up, it's pain. It's trauma. It's this inner drive for divine human communion and a spiritual renaissance that basically says enough is enough. Enough pain and suffering is enough. In our own lives, let's move on so that we can live a real meaningful life, you know, rather than attaching ourselves and becoming attached to the frauds and the deceptions and the, you know, the false gods, such as the god of money, the god of power, and, you know, all of those things that we now find ourselves as a minority population coming out of, like, we come out of her, my people, lest ye be infected by her plagues and her lunacy and her genocide. You know, get out of this insanity, and that is a spiritual process. So there's two things that I see that's going on in our minority population, and that is this awakening or consciousness evolution into spiritual reality is happening on a deep level internally, universally, musically, harmonically, like you say, vibrationally and hydrosonically, and that we're coming into this greater appreciation of not just who we are as powerful, loving, capable, worthy human beings who certainly deserve to have a greater destiny to fulfill than what we're currently witnessing, but also this, you know, feeling of dissatisfaction with the manipulation and the misrepresentation of who we really are and what our world really stands for. I think it's a combination of the two. It's dissatisfaction as well as a spiritual calling and an evolution that's moving us out of this fear domain into the love domain, and that's what the Concert for the Living Water is about. That's what all of my work, everything that I'm focusing on, deals with that. You know, I call it like the best of the best news, and getting out of the worst of the worst news. And, yeah, it's still important, I think, to some extent, to cover the worst news, the bad news, the Jonestowns, the AIDS, the anthrax, you know, the 9/11, as an expose on how bad really is. Mm-hmm. And my prayer is that pain and that suffering and that emotional charge linked to those hideous atrocities shall be the impetus for further opening the heart and awakening the consciousness.
Yes, I agree. In fact, you know, we have to relinquish or give up this illusion of separation and move into our creativity and our co-creativity.
Very important. It's vitally important. It's central. And yet we, you know, I kind of like feel like a neophyte, you know, a real baby when it comes to like, okay, you know, we're David and Goliath here. You know, Goliath is the Obama cartel, the Clinton-Obama-Bush cartel. You know, and here we are on the Inside Hour and on Evident Footprints talking about these realities and going up against the beast as we are. You know, if it wasn't that we've got 1 foot planted solidly in the kingdom of heaven, we wouldn't be doing this.
Well, I agree.
That's very true. Very true.
I agree. Well,
you know, one of my
David slew Goliath with a slingshot and a rock. Okay, we can make the slingshot be our musical instrument, and we can make the rock be the love frequency.
You bet.
On that note,
you wanted to say something, Rev, before we close up?
You know, with this 30th anniversary of Jonestown, and because I have to keep saying that, because I just love what Santana said, not Santana, but Santana said, those who do not remember the past are condemned to relive it. And that is so true, and it is so necessary for us to remember that all that we've talked tonight, I'm hoping that people will take it to heart, and we'll see where we're coming from and continue to listen to our shows to get the enlightenment and insight and the aha so that they can make good decisions in their lives. And that's what I pray for, that we can be redeemed.
Yes, I agree with you on that. And a theme over the past few weeks on this show has been that we can move into our knowledge rather than dealing with what is known. Let's bring it into the present. Let's bring it into the eternal now in the form of action and being. We are human beings, and that is an eternal now. And so we can look at the past and recognize what we could have done and move on. It's time to move on. So I want to thank both of you for being on Evident Footprints tonight. It was a surprise to have you on, Dr. Len. Pleasant surprise.
Well, great to join you again, brother. It's been a long time since we talked, so I was thankful for taking the opportunity.
Good. And Reverend Roxy Hampton, as usual, I enjoyed having you on the show. I'd like to do this again, actually.
Let's do it
with the music show.
Oh, yeah. Boy, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that just be too much?
And
I thank
you
for having me on the show, too.
Well,
God bless you, Don.
It's been a pleasure. And, you know, we'll have to do that. We'll have to schedule some shows for December, and we'll do a whole series. Let's try to do a weekly series at least.
Sounds good, John. Okay,
very good. Well, I'm going to say goodnight to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio, and our special guests, Reverend Roxy Hampton and Dr. Len Horowitz. And be sure to tune in to the Insight Hour every Tuesday night right before my show. That's 9 p.m. Pacific time. And we're going to make sure they come back in December. We're going to see if we can get maybe a Tuesday night music special going where we feature some of this music that Dr. Len has been talking about and I've talked about and Reverend Roxy. And be sure to check out all the wonderful products that Dr. Len has on his website. Dr. Len, do you want to give those web addresses out?
Certainly, Don. It's www.healthyworldstore.com. Healthyworldstore.com supports all the work that I'm doing, and it'll give you some great blessings for both education as well as for health protection and recovery. And then great concert event that Don and I are talking about, Reverend Roxy is engaged in, is Live H2O. You want to go check it out at livehto.org, www.liveh2o.org.
Okay, very good. And to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth Hendrick on the sound. We want to thank both of those gentlemen for their contribution to Evident Footprints and to the listening audience for tuning in. I hear the audience is growing every night, and I'm grateful for that. Keep listening. Keep telling your friends. In the meantime, enjoy a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.